The Red Army team is 50% owned by the Pittsburgh Penguin and a group of investors that includes movie and TV star Michael J. Fox.
And you called them what?
Well, they're called the Russian Penguins.
In the beginning, we didn't understand the risk. We didn't understand what the country was like.
I had the special talent of creating a firestorm inside arenas.
Stevie figured, well, these strippers would make great cheerleaders.
We just did whatever the hell we wanted there. People wanted to see the freak show. So they came.
There you go. Richard Roper is with us. Reed Simpson is also joining us right now. Reed, we're going to get to you in just 1 second. Hold on, my friend. But just give us a quick review of this film.
Yeah, so after the fall of the Soviet Union, the Red Army, which was the dominant hockey team, was pretty much disbanded. The main Moscow ice arena, there was no money there. So as you heard there, the Pittsburgh Penguins and a bunch of investors bought 50% of the team, sent this young guy named Stevie Warshaw there, this marketing genius, who found out there was a strip club still being operated in the basement of the decrepit arena, so brought the strippers up to dance between periods, had dancing bears actually serving drinks, had free beer night.
Actual real bears.
Had free beer night, no ID required. It was also super popular because they were one of the few public places in the new Russia that had toilet paper. So you got 2 meters of toilet paper when you entered the arena. They wouldn't have the rolls in the bathrooms because they would get stolen. And then they added all kinds of other gimmicks. And next thing you knew, they were selling out the arena. And when you start making money in Russia, what happens next? The Russian mafia says, where's our cut? And then all of a sudden, certain people started disappearing, including a photographer who made the mistake of taking a picture with certain businessman in the background who shouldn't have been seen. It was then found dead in front of his house. So it's an amazing true life story of what happened in Russia to hockey after the fall of the Soviet Union.
And Reed, you played in Russia. You were in the NHL for many, many, many years. Played on, I think, by my count, 9 teams in the NHL. Is that correct?
Yeah. It was a long stint there, that's for sure.
And your experience in Russia, because you've been back and forth there. You played. You also were a scout. You did some coaching there. And you've seen this. Is that exactly how it was?
You know, this movie is a fairly good show of what actually it was. I think that obviously in the early 90s, things were still a little bit more lawlessness and a little bit more like the Wild West, but it hadn't changed too much since then, other than there was, like I said, I think there was a little bit more, they knew what they were doing, I guess. They'd worked the kinks out a little bit in the 10 years prior to where I was. But it was a very, you know, respected league at the time that I was there. I think that, you know, they kind of had reorganized since the early 90s and made this Russian Super League an actual league where financially all the teams were very viable. There was, you know, it was actually hard at that point to get some of the young superstars to come over and play in the NHL because they could make so much money over there in Russia at the time, and the value of the ruble was so high that they stopped actually coming for a period of time, probably in the 2000, early 2000s to probably around 2009, and then you see another influx of players. But yeah, I took it when I went there with open eyes and just kind of said, hey, I'll do it their way and see what happened. And along the way I certainly saw and got to experience some pretty interesting ways of doing business.
Did you ever try the vodka just maybe once or twice while you were there? Just once.
Let me just tell you, it was more like the water. I mean, it was force fed to you. It's funny, like I go to the grocery store and I lived in a hotel there, and I'd go to the grocery store down the street from the arena and then walk home a lot of times and just cook in my room. And I'm not kidding, anywhere from like a 14, 15 year old buying, you know, a bottle of vodka and a candy bar to a 70 or 80 year old buying pierogies and a loaf of bread. Everybody had a bottle of vodka in that little bit of, you know, and it's funny, when I went into stores, like you'd have little convenience stores there, you know, size of CVS's here, where they'd sell everything, and literally half the store on one aisle was full of vodka. And it was just part of the culture there. And they're not, you know, you watch the movie, they're not kidding. When they say they drank a little bit, I mean, that means they drank, like, a lot compared to what we're used to. That's for sure.
Now, were players drinking during the game or before the game?
No, you know what's interesting? The players themselves didn't. Like, they were the sport, the athletes were really held to a different standard as far as, like, you know, when you talk about Tikhonov and you watch this movie and that, the players and I kind of, this was the one thing I kind of demanded when I was there, is that they still at the time in 2006 had players all living on a base. So you'd have to live in an army base, and basically they took all your day up with workouts and different things like that, just so you couldn't. And then you'd be monitored on when you could be and when you couldn't be there. But, you know, as far as management goes, and the regular people that were running the organizations, like, vodka was just part of the thing. And I think I learned there why the players didn't drink, because, you know, it was like, when they did, they did. It was like, in Russia, you're either on or you're off. And when you're on, it's a complete 48-hour, like, experience. It's not just have a few beers. And I had to kind of get that through the people I work for head when I was a player. Like, I'd go have a couple beers at dinner and you know, at night before a game, and they didn't understand that you can just have a couple beers or a glass of wine at dinner, and it's okay, because that's not how they do it in Russia. Even to this day, it's either on or off. And they would always get worried, like, hey, Reed's drinking. It's like, I'm having two beers. I'm not doing the all out
drinking a bottle
12,
of vodka.
12 bottles of vodka.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. All right. Hey, can I ask you really quickly? I got about a minute left with you before we go. Yeah. You see the Hawks game last night. Do you get a sense that this team really can get past Edmonton?
You know, I think so. I work for Montreal right now, and you know, we're up 2-1 on the Penguins now too. And at this point in time, every team has a pretty healthy squad, and I've watched the Hawks obviously a lot in the last 3 or 4 years, and they have a good amount of young guys there mixing with the old guys, and it's kind of a machine that's working pretty good. Yeah, if they do, obviously, if they upset Edmonton, it's definitely a big upset. But yeah, I think they can get by them. You know, they've got enough talent, and they've got enough. Everybody's playing for all the marbles right now, and in these short series, it's up for grabs right now. Edmonton's not going to go away too quickly, but, you know, it's a high scoring situation. If they can keep them from, you know, they can keep Edmonton from scoring more than 2 or 3 goals a game, they have a real good chance.
All right, Reed Simpson, thank you very much. Appreciate it, Reed.
Yeah, thanks, bro.
So the documentary is called Red Penguins, available on demand now. It's fascinating.
It's amazing.
Especially for hockey fans. You always heard about European hockey and what was going on there, and then the KHL and those Russians coming over here and playing. And yet there are horrifying stories of some of the early Russian superstars that came here from the Red Army team, the original Red Army team, and then got literally, you know, their families were kidnapped, and they'd have to send their NHL money back home.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah. And then the actual bears that were serving the beers and the strippers came later. All right. We will be back with you tomorrow. Again, we've got hockey in the late afternoon starting at 5:15, but it is going to be an incredible day on WGN tomorrow. And I'm telling you, I think we're going to be spending some time talking about the Hawks and the Stanley Cup. And Stanley Cup playoffs. Let's just get past. Wow. Let's get past Edmonton tomorrow. It's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, so that is coming your way. Also, the Knarble Wagon. A little. We never let the Knarble Wagon get preempted. There will be a Knarble Wagon tomorrow. Very important.
It has a giant face mask on it, but it's still. You can hear it. It pours. It works just fine.
I have found a sanitizer for the Knarble Wagon. The Knarble Wagon has lights that sanitize it at all times.
Nice.
It's called gin.
That's right. Well, I do spill a little bit of it when I'm like shaking, and then, it's good enough. We're fine. I'm apparently like a Russian.